Next case in our calendar is 05-1194 and 1247, the Sherwin-Williams Company versus Dayton Freight Lines. Mr. Gustin.
Yes, Your Honor. I represent the village of Lewisburg, a small community in Preble County.
Sir, you'll want to speak into that microphone.
I'm sorry.
Can you? Okay, good.
A little town in Preble County. On a day in early 2000, we were burning some Christmas trees and some yard trash in a place on the property that was owned by the village but was not in the village. Now, this case has proceeded from the trial court all the way through with the idea that this place where the burn was occurring was inside of the village, and it was not. It was very near to being inside the village, but it was right outside of the village, but on property that was owned by the village. Why they would own property outside a village is a question that I don't have an answer for, but they did have this property. They have a deed for it. They bought it, and it is referred to all through this record is behind the water plant. The water plant is also owned by the village. At any rate, we were burning these Christmas trees and we didn't get the fire out, obviously, because it was 10 hours later, not 8 hours later at least, another fire department came to the scene and sprayed it with water and put the fire out. But that day when we left thinking that the fire was already out, it was not out. And it was smoldering, obviously. And therefore, probably there was negligence on the part of Lewisburg because they didn't put the fire out. But all of the statutes, all of Chapter 2744 of the Ohio Revised Code deals with protecting the governmental unit from claims that are a result of something that the unit did wrong. Obviously, if the unit did everything right, if the governmental unit, the village did everything perfect, there wouldn't be any claim. But the sovereign immunity statutes, the group 2744, protect us from our own mistakes in effect. So we have this smoke that's smoldering in a little fire behind a water plant, and 3,000 feet away, in a heavy fog, vehicles start to pile up. Now, they don't pile up in the lane that's nearest to the village or nearest to the fire. They pile up on the other side of the expressway on Interstate 70, west eastbound, whereas the fire is closer to the westbound lanes. And in fact, no one knows where the smoke came from. The village, the people in the village burn wood in their fireplaces, burn wood in their stoves, create heat because this is a February 7th accident. It's wintertime, it's cold. The photographs show that there's snow on the ground, so there's no reason to think that they would not be burning their wood-burning fireplaces.
Counsel, what's the issue that you believe the Court of Appeals made a mistake on?
We think that the Court of Appeals was wrong when it stuck the village of Lewisburg with a wreck that happened 3,000 feet out of Lewisburg.
You think the idea of sovereign immunity extends to incidents which occur outside the political subdivision?
Yes. this case would be an example. We think that our immunity our immunity should protect us even for this wreck that happened way, a good deal away from the village. And there are some cases that...
Was there evidence that it was directly related to the fire?
No, no. Because there's no, I mean, smoke is smoke, and you cannot say that we could, our smoke is different color because it was behind a water plant. All these people on Commerce Avenue burn wood in their stoves. They burn wood in their fireplaces. So to say that some smoke is different than other smoke, it's very difficult, would be very difficult to identify. But for the purpose of art today, we have to admit that we're creating smoke and that the smoke may have drifted up on Interstate 70 in the eastbound lanes, which is a pretty good distance away from the fire, and say that even so, we should be entitled to this immunity because that's the whole purpose of that chapter, 2744 Ohio Revised Code, creating immunity for governmental units that otherwise have no protection.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of, it sets up general categories and then it indicates there are some things for
some
which
things
you're not immune.
Right.
And didn't the Court of Appeals find this is something for which the village is not immune under the statute?
The Court of Appeals found that the nuisance exception, which is one of the, there's a negligence exception,
right.
Nuisance, the nuisance exception did not protect the village from these claims from the accidents up on Interstate 70 because apparently, and at least my understanding of what they're saying, is that once you create a nuisance, the doors are open. You're going to get rammed from every direction because you are the originator of this nuisance, and therefore...
And you say what?
I say there's got to be a limit.
If you create a nuisance, your liability stops at the city boundary, even though the nuisance might go beyond the city boundary and harm somebody outside the city boundary?
Thank you very much.
If the harm had occurred inside the city, they would have been liable.
Correct, yes.
But once the smoke drifted outside the city, no liability. Is that the theory of your case?
My theory is that and if you don't have an opportunity, some kind of control to do something about once the smoke gets away or whatever the nuisance is going to
well,
be.
Well, that's the nature of smoke, isn't it?
It's the nature
it always
of fog,
gets away.
It's the nature of water, yeah. Yeah. It's the nature of any of these elements to leave the area in which they originated is Karras versus Toyota Motor Sales, which is the conflict case between this decision from the 2nd District and a decision from the 12th District. I'm sorry, I keep pounding on that thing. The decision from the 12th District, the only difference is that in my case, in the Lewisburg case, the substance that left the area was smoke, and Toyota Motor Sales, Karras versus Toyota Motor Sales, 12th District case, the substance that left the area was water. Water was flowing off of a county road onto a state highway, and the question was, how far is that going to be extended? In other words, for how far do we have to bear the responsibility for something that occurs outside of our area? When we can't do anything about it, we had no authority to close Interstate 70. Even if we had known that the smoke was dripping up on Interstate, how would we close Interstate 70?
Don't we have to look at the statute to see what the statute says? I don't want to make your argument for you, but it seems to me we have to look at, because the Court of Appeals reviewed 2744.02b3, that's the controlling statute, it seems to me, 3 and 4, is the controlling statute here. We need to look at the statute and not get, I guess, so involved in what the public policy ought to be. The General Assembly has stated the public policy on this issue, and it's somewhat restricted, it seems to me. So the first 03 is, as you know, caused by their failure to keep public roads, highways, and so forth, and public grounds within the political subdivision open and free from nuisance. Now, the question we have on that language seems to me, does the nuisance, if a nuisance is created on public grounds within the public subdivision or the political subdivision, is it confined then? Do we look then at four? Four is pretty clear to me that the municipality is liable for injury, death, loss of person, and so forth, caused by negligence of other employees, and that occurs within around the grounds of the buildings. Clearly, four, it seems to me, does not apply. This accident did not occur within your jurisdiction of the village.
3,000 feet away from our jurisdiction.
Right. Now, that's tough language, I guess. It's strict language, but this is what the General Assembly has given us to work with.
Right.
And isn't that the issue? That yes. How do we interpret, how do we apply those two sections of the subdivisions of the code?
It would seem to me that if that language is going to be changed, it would have to be through the legislature to change it. Four says, 2742B4 says, in effect, that if you're negligent, it has to happen inside of your jurisdiction. 03, which is the nuisance section, doesn't limit that to that extent as 04 does.
03 is a little more difficult to, it's not quite as clear.
Right, right.
But 03, as the chief points out, says that the political subdivision is liable for the injury for its failure to keep public grounds within its subdivision open and in repair. So if the smoke drifts outside, is it then?
It's not in the subdivision.
Pardon me?
Then it's not within the subdivision. I don't know. I think maybe the approach that was used in many of the cases, Mitchell, Big Bear, other cases that have been decided by this court, is that before we're going to tag you with a responsibility for a loss, you've got to have the control over where this event occurred. Big Bear involved the assault in the parking lot. The Big Bear had no control over the parking lot, and so there's no liability for Big Bear. Mitchell versus the Cleveland Electric Illuminating Company. The power plant is in the governmental unit in the Avon Lake, I think, but the loss occurs out in Lake Erie. No liability. We're saying that that same rule should apply to events such as this with the village of Lewisburg, because my belief is that in order to tax liability on a defendant, the village of Lewisburg have to have some way to control, prevent, to guard against.
We would have a totally different situation if this occurred within the village,
right.
and the accident occurred on a road within the village,
right.
And then you would have authority to close that road,
correct.
But you had no authority to close a highway.
We had no authority at all over Interstate 70, right? I don't know what that light means, but I guess it might be done.
That means you have two minutes remaining, so if you want to save some time, you might
I'll take my 2 minutes,
consider right. sitting down.
Thank
you, Mr. Gustin. Mr. Bacon.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name's Steve Bacon, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellee, Dayton Freight. Other counsel, Mr. Janice, Mr. Hunt, Mr. Ignazi, have graciously conceded their time to me. I'd like to note a few additional facts. Mr. Gustin's comment that this water plant is located not within city limits, but on property separately owned by the city, is nowhere in the record. It was attempted to be somehow gerrymandered into the record after the close of the trial court proceedings and after the decision of the appellate court, and it's not appropriately before this court. It also would make no difference The statute defines a political subdivision as a body, corporate or politic, responsible for governmental activities in a geographic area smaller than a state. I think we've all conceded that this burning was a governmental activity. I think this property within that the village owned, regardless of whether it's in the technical boundaries, is an area smaller than a state. So I think that's a distinction without a difference. Other additional facts. There was a discussion by Mr. Gustin about the fact that the purpose of this statute is to protect political subdivisions. And the reason the statute steps in to do that is because there is no common law sovereign immunity. Any immunity to a governmental body is in derogation of the common law. And equally important in this is while there may be a purpose to provide some immunity to governments, there's also a purpose with each exception to provide those injured by those governmental units some remedy. And also, this was not a fire 3,000 feet away. I think the Court of Appeals said it was less than a half mile. There is evidence which can put it much more closely to the accident itself. I believe witnesses at the scene saw a trail of smoke up to where the water plant was, and they believed that that fire up there was a house fire. The firefighters at the scene looked down and saw the smoke drifting towards I-70. I believe that you can link the smoke to the trail, or the smoke trail to the fire. And in fact, the trial court found there was a genuine issue of fact with regard to that. But really what this case is about is one aspect of governmental immunity. We know that there's no common law sovereign immunity and that there's a general granting of immunity through an earlier portion of the statute. But there are five exceptions, and this case concerns one issue on one exception. And courts of appeal in the state have applied that exception differently. They've come to realize that there's a conflict, and the specific question of this court was whether under former 2744-02B3 is a political subdivision liable for injury, death, or loss resulting from a nuisance on public grounds within the political subdivision when that injury, death, or loss is caused by a nuisance outside of the political subdivision. And I think if you actually read the statute, the answer is an unequivocal yes. When the political subdivision creates a nuisance or allows a nuisance on public grounds, they're liable for injury, loss, or death, which is caused by that nuisance, regardless of where that occurs. This court has addressed other exceptions and how they're to be interpreted. In the Hubbard case cited in the briefs, it's noted that where a statute such as this is clear and unambiguous, the duty of the court is to enforce it as written and to make neither addition nor subtraction. We've talked about what the statute says. Specifically, political subdivision is liable, injury, death, or loss to person or property caused by a failure to keep public grounds within the subdivision open and free of nuisance. There is nothing within the statute which places any kind of geographic requirement or predicate in order for someone who's injured to recover. And since the statute imposes no such predicate or requirement, this court should decline Lewisburg's invitation to create a requirement where none exists. In addition, affirming the decision of the Second District would also be consistent with prior holdings of this court. This court, and Mr. Gustin has referenced some of the cases, in Big Bear, in Mitchell, and in Rue, has always looked not to control of the area where the injury occurs, but control of the hazard. It looks to who could have prevented this. The Big Bear case was an assault in a shopping center parking lot. Big Bear wasn't liable because Big Bear didn't control the parking lot. They didn't control the hazard. Now, that happened to also be the place of the injury, but they didn't control the hazard.
Your point is the place of the injury is immaterial because Lewisburg failed to keep the public ground within its subdivision free from nuisance because they created one.
Correct.
And therefore, they're liable regardless of where the injury occurred.
And the statute says when the body—
Is that your point?
Yes, that is exactly my point.
But is there a nuisance on the public ground where the fire was occurring? Was that a nuisance?
Yes.
Okay, why?
It created a faulty or dangerous condition, an unattended
on
fire.
On the ground?
An unattended fire, I think, anywhere where all employees have gone off and left for the day when they failed to put it out appropriately is a nuisance that can cause danger anywhere.
The nuisance there is that the fire may restart. Not
sure.
The smoke from the fire that apparently allegedly caused the accident on I-70. Is that not an important distinction?
Well, I don't think that's an important distinction for two reasons, Your Honor. First, I think any unattended fire would be a nuisance. It may not be a nuisance for I-70 at that point, but an unattended fire, which could spread to the water plant, which could spread to anywhere within the subdivision, is a nuisance. And secondly, the statute says injury, death, or loss caused by a nuisance maintained on public grounds. Now, the condition is maintained on public grounds, and the fact that it escaped doesn't alter its form that it's a nuisance.
When they left, when everyone left, the fire was out. They believe the fire was out.
If I may note, I think one of the employees noted that he wasn't sure but thought the fire might be out. I think all the firefighters at the scene talked about how this was not an appropriate way to extinguish fires. They'd taken multiple piles, put them together, and just dumped dirt on top. That was in violation also of their EPA permit, which required burn piles no more than 5 by 5 feet, and as well that everything be extinguished by 4 p.m.
All of those are factual issues, though, not really germane to the point. We have to determine is the liability of the municipality for an injury occurring outside its territories, and the issue I think you're arguing to us is the nuisance was created within its municipality, and it's immaterial where the injury occurred.
That is exactly my point. And if you look at the Mitchell case, where people were drowned in an undertow from a power plant drainage, the hazard, the undertow, and as well the injury were all outside. In Ruey, when this court looked at the fact that a muffler had been laying outside of the city boundaries and it was struck and hit another vehicle, causing a death, the court noted in finding that the municipality wasn't liable that it wasn't within the boundaries and that the municipality had neither created nor had notice of it. We have a creation of a nuisance. In other words, when the party has control of the hazard itself and the statute affords a remedy, the wrong has a relationship to the remedy. But under the theory advanced by Lewisburg as to whether a party, or Lewisburg's liable, it's whether Lewisburg has control of the location itself. And that leads to arbitrary results, and arbitrary interpretations of the statute have been disfavored by this court. We've talked about the fact that if the smoke had blown north into Lewisburg, there would be remedy for these people. If the smoke blew south toward I-70, under Lewisburg's position, it would not. And liability should bear a relationship to the wrong, and it shouldn't be random or arbitrary and depend on which way the wind blows. The statute itself, in Revised Code 14702, talks about how it's supposed to be implicit, or it's supposed to be assumed that the General Assembly has always intended a just and reasonable result in enacting a statute. And the only way a just and reasonable result can result in this case is if Lewisburg is found liable for the nuisance it's created. Finally, Lewisburg has thrown out two or three red herrings in this instance, and I don't think that they're practical or speak to the real issues in the case. The number one was the location of the plant, and I think I've addressed that. Number two is the fact that they state that this would be a large burden on municipalities, small municipalities. But in this day and age, the municipality can protect itself the way anyone protects itself. In fact, it has more options. There are burden and risk-sharing mechanisms, such as municipal risk pools or insurance, that they can protect themselves from a burden that would be caused financially due to injuries they caused through maintaining a nuisance.
Here, they could have had someone stay and make sure the fire didn't restart.
And I was going to say the second thing is they can be more careful and not leave fires unattended. And I guess the final thing is that they've talked about this limitless expanse of geography for which they could be liable. But it isn't a limitless expanse. The statute says for injury, death, and loss caused by the nuisance. Well, that's proximate cause, and we've used that for decades in Ohio. And that's still a burden that appellees and those who were injured would have to meet at trial. There would still have to be a showing that this is reasonable and foreseeable that these injuries would result. And all this court would do by affirming the second district would be simply to allow those who are injured to bring the case potentially before the only tribunal which might begin to rival this court in importance, a jury of Ohio citizens. And that's what we're asking today, to affirm the second district and to find that regardless of where the injury occurs, a municipality or a political subcommittee is liable for injury, loss, or death caused by nuisance it maintains or allows to occur or creates on public grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bacon. Mr. Gustin, you saved a minute and your half, a minute and a half of your time for rebuttal.
What he's asking for is a legislative fix. This court to change this statute to fix it so that his clients can recover against the village. There is a one case which was not cited in any of the briefs or anyplace else, and I never found it till last Friday afternoon. It's a decision by this court.
You want to be up near the microphone, please.
Sorry.
We want to record your argument,
right.
So stay near the microphone.
I keep forgetting that. I'm sorry, Your Honor. In 1960, this court decided Osborne versus the City of Akron, which is a case that involved a nuisance and a loss which occurs outside of the area, the geographic area of the governmental unit, and this court said no liability. And all I'm asking is that we follow that 1960 decision and say that the village is not going to be liable for wrecks up on Interstate 7.
What is your response to Mr. Bacon's contention that there really was a nuisance on the public ground because there was a fire that was left unattended that restarted and that then caused the problem on I-70? That just the question of whether there's a nuisance on the public ground caused by the fire, which no one was attending, apparently.
If it is a nuisance, it was on public ground because the village owned the real estate, although it is outside of the corporate limit of the village. So, yes, it's there, and we can't deny that it's on ground that we own. We wouldn't be building fires on somebody else's property. So, yeah, we would be responsible for that, but not for those wrecks up on Interstate 70 a half a mile away.
So you're still saying that even though the condition was created on public ground, the injury has to be on ground that is controlled by Lewisburg, and that's your best argument here?
Yeah, that's my best argument, and it follows this court's decision in 1960 called Osborne versus the City of Akron, which says exactly that same thing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.